Bring on spring projects with Spring Black Friday Savings from The Home Depot. With free delivery on over 2 million items, you can bring on the spring cleaning, the patio decorating, and the front yard gardening. And if you need it fast, get same-day delivery on thousands of products like fertilizer and seeds to keep your yard looking beautiful. Bring on the spring doing and spring your way only at The Home Depot. How doers get more done. Order select in-stock items by 4 p.m. subject to availability.
Hey, listener, are you happy with your current chicken wings? Do you wish you had something a little saucier? If you answered yes, then it might be time for you to break up with your old chicken wings and get a new honey. Lemon pepper wing from Popeyes. Share the wings with your friends so they can see it's time to move on, too. Head to Popeyes and get 6-piece honey lemon pepper wings for $5.99. At participating U.S. restaurants, price may vary.
Welcome to the Pro Basketball Talk podcast. I'm Dan Feldman. Very glad to be joined today by Jeremy Wu of Sports Illustrated to talk about the NBA draft. Jeremy, how are you doing?
I'm good. You know, this week is always a little chaotic, but I think this year, you know, I'm not going to the draft, so I'm kind of just holed up in my apartment, kind of making calls and looking at the board. And it's been a little bit less stressful so far, but you know, we're taping this Tuesday morning, so that will probably not be the case in like 5 hours.
Let's start with the top of the draft. I think there is somewhat of a consensus top three in Jabari Smith of Auburn, Chet Holmgren of Gonzaga, and Paolo Banchero of Duke. And the way I say somewhat of a consensus, it seems like everybody I talk to likes two of those players. And it varies which is the one left out. And there's always somebody different who they might like instead, or maybe they still have that other guy third, but it's not quite on that same tier. But you talk to enough people, hear enough opinions on it, that it does tend to be those three rising toward the top. Where do you fall in this? Who do you like the most of those three? And is there one you're not as high on, like it seems like everybody is?
Yeah. So, you know, for me, pretty much all season, I guess really December was when I sort of made up my mind. But Jabari Smith is the guy for me, where it feels like, you know, I understand there's been a lot of dialogue about, you know, who number one should be. And it's definitely one of those years where it's close. But for me, I tend to think people are kind of overthinking it with him, just because he's not super flashy in terms of, you know, what he does effectively. But I think that guy's really special, man. Like Jabari is the guy who I would be really, really afraid to not take. I think with the shooting being like a truly, truly elite skill, like I go to a ton of games during the season. So, I've seen a lot of players over the years, and I have not seen a guy that size shoot it like him. You know, maybe since I've started doing this, like almost, it's been about 10 years. So I think he's really, really special in that regard. And, you know, the more you find out about him as a person, and, you know, I did a story on him, so I think I probably have a more firsthand, you know, understanding of who Jabari is. But it's very, very justifiable him at one. Like, you know, he likes to play defense. He can switch different situations. He can guard the perimeter. I think he'll be able to play a little bit of center to close games as he gets stronger. And I think the, you know, the context of how Auburn played had a role in why he didn't get to the rim as much. It wasn't like he wasn't a good finisher. He just took a lot of long twos because that was kind of how their scheme worked. You know, their guards weren't very creative, and they were a little bit shoot first, and often Jabari was kind of the safety valve for their offense in some ways, you know. So you know, I could go on forever about him, and I really, really think he's a special player. So for me, he's definitely number one.
So I've been leaning toward him number one as well. I'm not nearly as high on him as I think you are. I do have a little more concern about his ability to create shots. I mean, he made those self-created, you know, ISO-ish long twos at a high rate for that shot. That's not a great shot, though. I wish he were better at, you know, creating more efficient shots, right? Shots that are just generally more efficient rather than being so good at making difficult shots. Not that making difficult shots isn't important. Sometimes you can go against a really good defense.
Well, I'll push you on that a little bit. I'll push back a little bit because I think, yes, like in a vacuum, we can say we probably don't want long twos. But if you look at the type of shots that are late clock shots and late game shots, and sometimes the shots that someone's got to take, I mean, oftentimes it's that shot. And, you know, sometimes it's better to take that shot than, you know, barrel into the paint against, you know, if it's crowded, right? So like,
For sure.
It's a really special skill that he has. And I don't think he's going to be the type of guy who's just going to like jack, you know, early in the clock twos. Like he plays in the flow of the game. He's going to shoot threes. Like, and I think he's going to keep getting better. I mean, I think you really have to keep in mind too, that Jabari played his whole freshman year at 18. You know, he's 6 months younger than Paolo. He's an entire year younger than Chet. So like, let's say we sent Jabari to Gonzaga next season and let him beat up on that competition at the same age Chet was this year. What do you think would happen? Right, dude, he would average 30 points a game. So just, you know, I think it's an important perspective to have. For me, it's not that complicated, but I understand the other opinions. I understand why people are a little bit, people who maybe don't follow, I'm not saying you, but you know, people who don't follow college basketball as closely, you know, maybe are nitpicking that part of his game.
Oh, no, first of all, that is me. I mean, I college basketball, I follow college basketball. This is why I wanted to have you on. And I think the theme of this episode is going to be, you know, I'm a late arrival to studying for the draft. You're doing it all year. You're tracking these players' progressions. You're seeing how they're going. And I think that's so valuable. And sometimes I'll see a guy, and I'm going to ask you about some of them. I'm like, well, man, I don't really get why he's rated so highly by the draft people. And sometimes it's the other way. Sometimes it's, you know, well, what am I seeing? That they're not, vice versa. And you know, that's a lot of what I want to ask you about is, well, why am I looking at this guy wrong? As somebody who I think, like a lot of fans, a lot of people are, you know, come late to the draft and are trying to catch up and get to the full understanding where you are. And as far as Jabari's shooting, yeah, I agree. I put tremendous value on the ability to make difficult shots because, like you said, sometimes you have to take those. I just wish he were a little better at creating efficient shots and getting some of those. And it's not to diminish the ability to make difficult shots. I value that very much. One question I have about Jabari, and maybe this will, you know, you mentioned his age, and I do think that's one of the things people underrate the most in drafting is how important a player's age is when evaluating what he can do. And maybe this will change in time, but I'm talking about Jabari now, near term. Sometimes I wonder, why isn't he just a shooting guard in the NBA? And hear me out. I know this is going to sound sort of unconventional. I think, you're giving up some ball handling ability, definitely some passing ability, that playmaking you typically get from a shooting guard. But I think he's a better perimeter defender than interior defender right now. I really like how he moves his feet on the perimeter, his aggressiveness out there. And so it might just be a more natural matchup to have him on twos. You're going to create a complete mismatch on the other end with his height. Other team is going to have their more traditional shooting guard. Who are they going to put him on? If you have a traditional lineup, except for Jabari at the two, I just wonder, like, what are you giving up there? Besides, you know, maybe some playmaking, is that not enough to where the optimal lineup construction around him is a average point guard, an average small forward, an average power forward, an average center?
Yeah, well, to me, the question of positions in the NBA now, it's literally just who can you guard? Like, I think offense is just so much about roles and skills and not really about positions. Like, you can come, you know, because bigger players have become more skilled, there's so many different ways you can play that, like, for me, the position question isn't really something I've worried about. Like, I think you're right that he'll be able to guard some wings. Like, you know, to your point about his, again, he's not like a super adept off the dribble creator yet. If he's like facing you up, but that's just not what his game is, right? But you know, I wouldn't classify him as a guard just because he's not going to be someone who is necessarily bringing the ball up. I don't think he's going to be like initiating offense at least at this point in his career. But yeah, I mean, the defensive versatility is a huge part of this too. You know, obviously Chet's a really good defensive prospect, but I think it's a lot surer thing that Jabari is going to be able to defend three positions than it is in Chet's case, right? So, and the other thing I'd say is I just think there are a lot of ways to build a good defense in the NBA, and you can cut that, you know, a lot of different ways depending on your scheme and your personnel and who you have, right? But there's not a lot of ways to score. And you know, I think jump shooting is really a separator. And you know, one other thing is just, you know, I've looked back and just from my empirically looking at it, like in the past, you know, 10 drafts or whatever, like whenever there's been a point where there's like a, you know, two picks that are close, like early in the draft and you're splitting hairs, oftentimes the guy who just was the better shooter ended up being the better pick. Like, you know, you can go back and look at it, but it's shooting tends to kind of reign supreme as a separator. So with him, it's just a huge piece of it.
Yeah, that we'll get into that a little more with some other prospects, but I'm in total agreement. I have placed greater emphasis on shooting than I used to. It's one of the reasons I'm leading Jabari number one. And along with that, more of a negative for the guys who can't shoot. It cuts both ways. So if I'm not mistaken, Chet is the one of those three you are not as high on. You have him fourth on your board.
Yeah. And I wouldn't like, I'm not saying Chet's going to be like a bust, cause I don't think that's going to happen. But I think just, you know, looking at the top guys, where I kind of landed is I think there's an easier pathway to, I can just see easier pathways to stardom, for the other three, you know, Jabari and Bankero and even Jaden Ivey. Chet's a really unique prospect, and, you know, defensively what he can do, I think, is immensely valuable. You know, the frame only concerns me to a point. Like, it's not a post-up driven NBA anymore. Like, I don't think anyone is under that illusion. You know, and I agree that it can sound just kind of reductive to be like, oh, you know, he's skinny and like nitpick the body. But I do think that it's kind of also irresponsible to not consider it, just because not only is it, you know, part of the reason why he may struggle, at least initially, but it's also part of why he's so good, right? I mean, the mobility and fluidity that he has at his size is due in large part to just, you know, it's all biomechanical and how much weight he has or doesn't have, right? So, you know, if he's 190 now, I mean, can we say with confidence, like, even if he could hypothetically get to like 220, like, would that necessarily be a good thing? Like, I don't know. Like, I just think it's a tricky thing to guess at. But I do think it's going to be hard for him at 190 to do certain things, right? It's not like he's going to be totally ineffective. But I think, like, just rebounding in general, you know, guys are going to be able to get into his body and kind of keep him out of plays. Like, I think the rebounding could be reduced a little bit. You know, I don't really worry about him so much defensively, because as long as you play him with, you know, a stronger guy next to him, like, he'll be able to kind of rove around and contest shots and do that. But for me, it just kind of comes down to, again, the point I just made about, again, I think there's a lot of ways you can build a really good defense, and obviously having a player like that helps. And there are things that he can do offensively that are, you know, pretty unique for someone that size, but I don't feel confident that he's going to be, you know, someone you're going to play through regularly on offense. You know, maybe he gets there, maybe, you know, Porzingis gets thrown around a lot, and I think, you know, there's a pretty good chance he's better than that. Like, has a better career than Porzingis, who's been a little bit underwhelming, you know, after his early years. But again, part of that was because Porzingis couldn't stay healthy. So, you know, with Chet, I think it's a little bit harder for me to see, you know, the full offensive translation. Also considering that, you know, he was, you know, a year older than Smith, and he's, you know, he's 20 now, and he was always kind of old for his class coming up. And I just think that, I don't think he's ever played in a situation where guys can sort of consistently, you know, challenge his size and skill. You know, it's just, there's, that's one thing that just doesn't scale, you know, until you get to the NBA, right? Like, he's not going to see guys like him at any other level, you know, no matter where he would have played in college, like West Coast Conference or Big Ten or whatever, it would have been, you know, hard to say that it's sort of akin to the NBA. So I have enough questions that I have him, you know, fourth, but, again, I do think he's a really good prospect. I'm not like a Chet hater. I think it sometimes sounds like I am, just because I'm not like, you know, jumping for joy. You know, he's not like, I think there are people you'll read takes that are just a little bit more glowing than mine, right? But it's going to be really fascinating to see what happens, you know, with his career. I'm really, really eager to kind of see what it looks like.
Yeah, I think he might be the most intriguing player in the draft in a certain level, because he's so different than anybody I've ever seen. There's just, yeah, the Porzingis comparison is okay. I just haven't seen anything that's a good comparison for him. His game is so distinctive. Yeah, his weight is a concern. It's not a post-up, like you said, but there are so many things that come with being that thin. I mean, for a thin player of his size, he is thin. There's just never really, at least lately, been anybody like him.
Bring on spring projects with Spring Black Friday Savings from The Home Depot. With free delivery on over 2 million items, you can bring on the spring cleaning, the patio decorating, and the front yard gardening. And if you need it fast, get same-day delivery on thousands of products like fertilizer and seeds to keep your yard looking beautiful. Bring on the spring doing and spring your way only at The Home Depot. How doers get more done. Order select in-stock items by 4 p.m. subject to availability.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle, because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider, and also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
Is this house a good price compared to others in the area? Are prices going up or down? If I don't make an offer right this very moment, will I miss my chance? These are just some of the questions a home buyer might ask. And these are the sorts of questions an agent who is a Realtor can help answer. Because Realtors have the expertise, data, and access to specialty training to help you navigate the process of buying a home. They provide support, guidance, and have your back every step of the way. That's what Realtors do, because that's who we are. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors.
And so that leaves Paolo Banchero, who I guess is the one I've mostly hated on. As I've rewatched, he's grown on me to the point where maybe I do have him in this top tier after not initially. But here's my big question. He's listed at 250 pounds. How confident are you that weight is accurate? Because I think having that weight, having that power behind him is a lot of the selling point of the things he can do. But when I watch him play, you know, he doesn't look like he's carrying that much weight, that much power. So if he actually has that, that's great, and I feel much better about him. If he's not actually, you know, that big and strong, well, it's not like I'm going to have him at the bottom of the trap by any means, but these are the small differentiators for me.
Yeah, I mean, I don't question the weight.
Okay.
I mean, I would have no reason to know. I would have no way of knowing. It's like I've asked Duke about it. But I mean, you know, I've seen him play. I mean, he's a big, strong guy. Like, I don't doubt it. Like, some guys are just built like that. It's more to me about, you know, the movement and all that. Like, regardless of what he weighs, we can see how he moves and how he functions.
Well, he moves like somebody who's 20 pounds lighter. And so if he actually is 20 pounds lighter, well, okay, there's not as much power behind it. If he is that weight, I know how he moves. How he moves is great for the weight and good for a lesser weight.
Yeah, I mean, I think it just comes down to he's just very, very coordinated for that size, and he always has been. And, you know, earlier in his high school career, you know, when I saw him play like in summer 2019 for the first time. And, you know, again, he was more of a back to the basket big. Like, I thought he was going to be like, you know, evolutionary Boris Diaw is what he was saying then. And what happened was he lost a lot of weight, and he actually changed his body a lot. And it sort of changed the outlook for what he could be as a pro. So, you know, to me, it's not so much about, I don't question the strength. Like, I think he's clearly pretty physical. It's just more of, you know, he doesn't get a ton of lift around the basket. He's not like super vertically explosive, and I don't think that's going to change necessarily. So, you know, that's just gonna, it makes the margins a little bit thinner for him to be, you know, precise, and dominant with his skill. Right. So, I think it's still a separator for him. And I do think he can, you know, create mismatches and things, but, you know, I always am a little bit cautious with guys who are a little bit bigger and stronger when they're younger. And then, you know, you it's harder to take the bully ball. You know, Paolo is not really, I shouldn't classify him as a bully ball guy, because he does have a lot of finesse to his game, but
especially defensively.
Yeah. But you do see, you know, guys who rely on being stronger and bigger than other kids, you know, sometimes struggle to adjust, because in the NBA you can't really play that way. But again, he's so skilled that I think there's a chance it'll work, and he'll, you know, can hit. He's such a good passer. I think there's a lot of different ways for Paolo to be good, which I think is part of the appeal.
For him to be great, I think he's got to be a better shot maker. Do you see signs that he can connect better, especially on threes, than he did at Duke?
Yeah, I don't think he's a bad shooter. I mean, it does worry me a little bit. But oftentimes guys who are just so skilled, you know, tend to figure it out. And he can do so many things with the ball. You know, clearly he has aptitude for that. So, you know, I think he'll be an average shooter. But, you know, I was there at the ACC tournament, and he kind of like forgot how to shoot that week, and it was kind of a disaster. So I think there's definitely reason to be concerned. Like, at least we can say he is not as good of a just as a jump shooter as Chet and Jabari.
What about defensively? When I see him at Duke, he just looks so passive. It's not even just like taking bad gambles, just not that involved, not defending with force. Like, he's this big, strong, mobile guy. Why isn't his defense better?
Yeah, I don't think it's as much of a problem as maybe it's been made out to be. Like, there's a period of time where I was kind of going back and forth on it. I mean, look, I think when he wanted to be, he was fine. I just think he's not a rim protector,
agreed.
And not, you know, not all bigs are. So I don't know that he'll be. I think you can try him as a small ball five, but I don't know if it's going to be like super successful all the time. Yeah. So it's something I think you'll want to at least attempt, right? And maybe you pair him with a big who can, you know, block shots and shoot threes, and it works out fine. Defensively, it's not like you were expecting him to be, you know, a menace. Like, I think he's clearly behind the other two guys in terms of defensive upside and just current impact.
And he played well with Mark Williams, which is encouraging of his ability to play with a center. I agree. I think he'll have to. Let's go to Jaden Ivey, who you have up there with these top three ahead of Chet, as we mentioned. Great first step, great burst getting to the basket, and a lot of good things can come from that. You know, it creates shots for himself. He doesn't have to become a great passer because he's going to attract so much attention with that first step. But I don't know. I don't see anything else within his game, and I'm not trying to diminish that one part of his game, like, because it's so important, but I don't really see anything else in his game that really wows me, that really makes me feel great about him as a prospect. Is there something I'm missing?
Well, with Ivy, I mean, he's so explosive. Like, it's unique. Like, there, he's going to be one of the, you know, 98th, 99th percentile athletes, like, right when he gets to the NBA. Right. Mm-hmm. And that's like the center of the appeal. I think he's the type of guy where it kind of depended on what day you saw him, because he was mercurial. Sometimes, you know, I saw him play live probably 10 or 11 times this year. I live in Chicago, so I went to a lot of games, and, you know, I saw Purdue a lot. And yeah, you know, there were games where I saw him, I was just like, this guy's unbelievable. And you could see what it could be. And there were other games where he really floated and his body language wasn't great. And you worried about, you know, maybe how ready he would be to lead a team. So, I mean, I think there really is a lot to like. I mean, it's, you know, when we're talking about guys who, I don't like falling back generally on the NBA spacing thing, because I think it's kind of a crutch argument, because, like, most players are better with more space, right? And the NBA, you're going to have more. But Ivy, I think, is someone it's especially salient to make that point, because he is so fast. He's just shot out of a cannon. And, you know, if you can put shooters around him, you know, in Purdue, he was always playing with a big, usually on the same side of the floor as him on the block. That is not going to happen in the NBA. So, you know, you create space for him to get to his strong hand and just barrel into the paint, and, like, good things are going to happen. And I think he's a good enough passer that he'll be able to pass off the threat of his drives. Like, I don't know that he's a true point guard, but you want to experiment with him on the ball. So, yeah, I mean, the upside with him is really, really high. And I think it's just a matter of, you know, will he be in the right situation, and will he be, you know, will he make that progression sort of as a leader and as a point guard to really maximize it, right? Because if he's a two, and if he's more of like a Donovan Mitchell type of role, you know, that'll still be pretty good, but it's not the same type of, like, winning adjacent, like, not the same type of role that drives winning in that same way. So I think that's what people are curious about.
Yeah, I think he'd have to go so far as a shooter to be a good enough shooting guard where you feel good about having taken him high in the draft. But there's a lot more avenues if he can see the playmaking. That's something that often develops later for prospects. There's one other prospect who really wowed me when I watched video of him in this top group to me, and that's Shaedon Sharpe, who did not play for Kentucky, but just eye-popping, vertical. He has a good shot from the perimeter. I like the moves he has to get off the shot on the perimeter, but he didn't play Kentucky again. You know, he's missed a year of development, or had it, you know, not the traditional year of development, the very minimum. How concerned should teams be of, you know, that he didn't play competitive basketball for a year? There are these reports he's not looking so good in workouts. Like, how big do you think the gap is between, hey, here's this video, here's all the things that people saw to make him the number one recruit in the next recruiting class before he reclassified, and what's the gap between that and the player you're actually going to draft?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what everyone's trying to figure out. You know, the workouts have been up and down, I would say, based on everything I've heard. You know, his tools, as you said, it's very, very easy to just, you know, see the flashes of why he could be really good. I mean, he's really, really explosive. He can really jump. He's got length. Defensively, he can kind of like, he's not really a guy who gets up in the ball, but he can fly around and block shots and gamble and make those type of plays because he is so, you know, explosive and quick. I think the biggest thing with him is, I think the motor is a real question. And I think it's not so much that, well, I think the bigger issue with him not playing, it's not the skill set, because you can see what that is, but it's just a matter of like, how does he react in adverse situations? How does he deal with, you know, really, really competitive environments? And, you know, to his credit, like, they've put him in workouts where he's been in 3-on-3s. And so he's, you know, they've tried to, you know, show that he's willing to embrace that stuff. Right. But I think that's still the question teams have. And it's why, you know, his stock has been sort of so fluid. Like, he could probably go as high as 6 and he probably won't fall past like 11. But that's kind of what the range is right now. And yeah, again, he's someone, you know, I've seen him play in person, but I haven't seen enough where I'm totally confident that, you know, the motor clicks anytime soon. But again, the counterpoint I'd make is, look, like, Andrew Wiggins, we had similar type of questions. And again, at least we saw him play at Kansas. But, you know, now fast forward, and it's been a while, it took a while. But, you know, Wiggins is a guy who was, you know, one of the best players in the finals and helped swing the finals. So, like, the upside with him is there. And if you're confident that you can be patient with him, it can go a long way. But again, he's not a point guard. He's a scorer. He doesn't do a lot to make other guys better right now. And they're just, I think, unknown factors that make it a little bit harder to like be both feet in on him, just based on the information that everybody has. Cause we've all seen, you know, the tape is there. We can all see what he can do, you know, with the ball and as a shooter.
Generally, I'm a believer that high in the draft, you should, you know, it doesn't have to all be about upside, but you should lean more toward upside and also take the long view. Most rookies aren't actually that good. You shouldn't be trying to find the immediate fit, the immediate boost, and try and take what player is going to have the best career. To me, I'm still working on finalizing my draft board, probably going to publish that on Wednesday morning. To me, I don't see anybody I like more than Sharp outside of those big three of Jabari Smith, Chet Holmgren, Pablo Banchero, and then Jaden Ivey, who you also have up there with that top group. Am I crazy for having Sharp that high if he's fifth on my board?
No, you're not. Again, like, based on the information that is available, like, I can understand that. I don't have him that high, but, you know, I think, right. I think he was 8 on my list, and I was going back and forth, like, 8, 9, 10, like, what I was going to do with him. But yeah, no, it's not totally crazy. Like, the upside is certainly, and, you know, high enough to make an argument.
Are there any player or two who stands out? I want to ask this both ways, because I am a believer that those intangible things of, you know, how hard of a worker are you? What's your mindset? What's your approach to the game? Those things are so important in dictating a player's outcome. And they're also extremely hard to evaluate, even for a team that has all the access to players for interviews and to do background. They're still hard to evaluate. They're even harder to evaluate from the outside. But there are 1 to 2 players where you feel really good about those intangible things for them, that hey, if you're just watching their film, you're going to underestimate them. And then on the other side, are there 1 or 2 players that you feel like, yeah, these are question marks for this guy. This guy does not have the strongest track record there. And if you're just watching his film, you might overrate him.
Yeah. I mean, of the guys like on my board who I have, you know, very high that I feel good about, I mean, it's, you know, part of it's for that reason. It's Dyson Daniels, Keegan Murray, and Jeremy Sohan. I love all three of those guys. And those are my, you know, my 5, 6, 7 on my, you know, the rankings on our site. And yeah, I mean, I think you can sort of generalize for all three of them, the maturity and the worldliness and the lack of entitlement that those three players have is really going to matter. I think, you know, when we talk about fit, it's not just about, you know, positional fit or skill set fit, but it's also like organizational fit and like, how do you want to build? And I think those things are all salient. And so players like that who are, you know, going to help drive winning and who are going to be, you know, very positive. And I think, you know, you could even throw Johnny Davis in that group. I love Johnny Davis because I think he's so competitive. Like, this is a draft that has a lot of those guys, you know, in the top group. You know, Ben Mathurin is a guy who I think people also really like. So, you know, I know that was like 5 guys and you wanted 1 or 2, but like,
I
think that's,
I didn't want to put too much pressure on
no,
you.
No, I think that's one of the strong points in the draft, is that I think these are a lot of solid guys who are, you know, pretty good prospects in their own right. So the top 10 to me, like, there's a lot of pretty good options. So again, I think when we talk about Shaedon Sharpe, like, when you're talking about him in a vacuum, yeah, it sounds great. But then when you're talking about him versus someone who you're really, really sure is going to give you, you know, some of that stuff, then it becomes a little bit harder to say with certainty that you take him in a certain spot, right? So that's part of why the draft is interesting.
Bring on spring projects with Spring Black Friday Savings from The Home Depot. With free delivery on over 2 million items, you can bring on the spring cleaning, the patio decorating, and the front yard gardening. And if you need it fast, get same-day delivery on thousands of products like fertilizer and seeds to keep your yard looking beautiful. Bring on the spring doing and spring your way only at The Home Depot. How doers get more done. Order select in-stock items by 4 p.m. subject to availability.
A lot can happen between falling in love with a house online and owning it. Between imagining living there and breathing in your new home for the first time. Having an advocate who can help you navigate the complex world of financing, inspections, negotiating, analyzing the market, and talking through any anxieties that may pop up, that can make all the difference. That's what the expertise of a Realtor can do for you. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors and bound by a code of ethics. Because that's who we are.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
And what about the flip side? Is there any besides Shaden Sharpe you've kind of alluded to where you don't feel as good about that?
I'm not going to take this tack. I don't want it to sound like I'm like bashing players, you know, but I think if you talk about like motor and consistency and like reliability, like guys like, you know, Jalen Duren, I think his motor has always been a question. You know, Tari Eason was not always the most reliable, you know, player at LSU. Like, I think there's stuff to like with him, but I went and saw them play twice and I was never super impressed either time. Right. So like, again, I go to a ton of games. So like, so a lot of the observations that I make in person really influence, you know, how I do my list. You know, I try to approach it like a team would. But yeah, I mean, those are some of the guys that I think, you know, you might see may or may not affect, you know, where they go, but will still go like relatively high.
So some of the players that in the way I watch it, like I've said, kind of coming late to the process and you know, I watch some college basketball and have some impressions, but then digging deeper as it gets closer to that, I can't quite figure why the general consensus seems to be so high on them. Two that stand out are our centers. You mentioned Jalen Duren from Memphis, Mark Williams from Duke, more limited players. I see where the league is going. The league's oversaturated with solid centers, you know, limited centers. It's still helpful to have one who can play. But there are just so many of them out there. They're not earning as high of salaries, or at least shouldn't earn as high of salaries. Why are those guys still rated so highly on draft boards?
I mean, look, I think it kind of has to do with, I agree with you. Like, I am someone where I'm kind of in the camp of like, you know, only draft a center if there's not really a better option or whatnot. But also like, you know, when I'm doing rankings, like in a vacuum where I'm not picking for a team and I'm just ranking, it's like, you know, you look at Jalen Duren and Mark Williams and you look at, you know, their bodies and what they, you know, physically are going to bring. Like, there's no question. They're both, you know, Mark is a massive guy and Jalen is, you know, a really, really huge, like cut, strong guy. And he's 18. So like, you know, those types of guys with those types of, you know, physical outlier skills. And, you know, Mark plays really, you know, pretty hard. And I think it really embraces his role. And like, these guys are going to have long NBA careers somewhere. Right. So again, like, it's a different value scale. Like, if we're just talking about in the draft and we're ranking like who we think is going to have the best careers, I mean, those guys are probably going to be in the NBA for a long time. Now, being in the NBA and being like winning adjacent are two different things. And it's going to, you know, with bigs, it often depends more on being in the right situation rather than what type of player you are, right? Like, Andre Drummond has bounced around a ton. He's super productive, right? Like, he's just not as valuable as he used to be, but he's still productive and he's still in the NBA because you still need size. So, I think it's kind of a gray area when I'm doing the rankings. Like, I never really know where to put bigs, like relative to other stuff. But again, at the end of the day, it's like, who, if you're talking about who would you rather have, like, if you're sure a big is going to get you a double double and be reliable and be stable, I think you'd still take that over, you know, someone who you're not sure is going to be, you know, if you have more doubts about. Right. But I think you're right. You're on something there that it's something that people have very differing philosophies on. And certainly, like, you know, it's often a challenge for me when I'm doing public rankings.
A couple more specific skills with players I have some questions on. Keegan Murray. I like his game overall. I like a lot of things. But to me, he wasn't a standout passer, not a multi-position defender. And when I look at players who really help their teams become more than the sum of their parts, those are two of the key skills. Am I underrating him in those, or am I maybe onto something where he could be a good individual player, but there might be some limits on how he functions helping his team on both ends?
Yeah, I understand those concerns. I wouldn't like, to me, those are not really big issues, frankly.
Okay.
Because I think the team context at Iowa, you know, he was kind of the funnel where he had to score a lot. They didn't have like a ton of other talent. So like, you know, sometimes you just kind of have to understand that type of thing. You know, it's not like he has bad feel, like he knows where to be, but he had to shoot a lot. I think if you go back and you watched him, particularly for the defensive concerns, you know, last year, the year before this at Iowa, he was a role player and he didn't play a lot. And he was a great defender and impactful, you know, when they had Luka Garza and Joe Wieskamp kind of as the two main guys in Iowa. So I think all that has to be taken into account. And I think, you know, Keegan has, you know, said those things like, too. It's like, you know, he was, his role totally changed and he went from being a, you know, energy defense guy to being an offensive focal point. And I think the fact that he can do both those things is notable, right? Because in the NBA, he's not going to be a 30% usage scorer. So he's going to have more energy to expend defensively. And again, he's a big, long 6'8 guy. So like, even if he's not going to switch on to point guards, like you can put him on somebody and he's probably not going to suck. So like, you know, to me, the defensive concerns with Keegan kind of don't make sense. Frankly, it's just in my opinion.
So I just want to clarify in the defense. I do think he'll be a solid defender of forwards. It's, I think he might be too slow to defend on the guards. I think he might not have the lift to defend bigs inside. I do think he'll be fine against forwards.
I hear you. Defense. I hear you. And I think sometimes one of the thought traps that's easy to fall into in this draft or just drafts in general is it's like, yeah, we nitpick these things with top guys because we want everybody wants to have takes on them. But at the end of the day, like you can only draft who's in this class. And then, you know, it's this guy's a really good player just generally. And like everyone's going to have flaws, right? So at some point there are things it's like, is this really a problem or can we live with it? And I think I'm not saying that you're saying that because I think you're, you know, it's fair to say like, yeah, he's probably going to be a, you know, solid team defender, probably not going to be a guy who enables you to do a lot of stuff schematically necessarily. But again, not everyone is that. And those guys are very few and far between, right? So like, if we're just talking about, hey, we got to pick somebody, you know, how does this guy fit in the NBA? I mean, those are not things that are detrimental to his ability to be really good. They're just things he might not be as good at, right?
Yeah, I definitely want to be clear. I am nitpicking because at a certain point you have to, right? Are you going to take this guy number five or would you take him number six? Like, you know, those nitpickings matter. I am definitely going to have him high on my board. It's not like, oh, he has these flaws, second round pick. No, nothing like that. AJ Griffin, a wing from Duke, who I like some things on. My big question with him, do you think he's going to be able to shoot on the move? He's got that wide stance in his shot. It's a little bit different. You know, obviously convert a lot of not quite standstill, but closer to standstill shots and spot up shooting. But is he going to be able to shoot on the move? Because I think that's really what you need in the NBA to be a shooting specialist. Like, maybe that's what he'd be.
Yeah. Well, you know, AJ is 18 and doesn't turn 19 until August. So, like, I think it'd probably be folly to say that he can't do those things. The shooting is not the thing that I'm concerned about with him at all. You know, that's his best skill. So,
yeah, I just want to clarify. So it's similar to Murray where it's I'm nitpicking because, well, how good of a best skill is? Is it a very good best skill or is it a great best skill? And those are the things that can matter a little bit.
Well, again, like I just said, AJ's 18, right? I don't want to sound like I'm like hammering this home too much, but like it's Keegan is going to be 22 in August and AJ is going to be 19 in August. So it's do two different things. But like for an 18-year-old, and if you look at the season AJ had shooting wise, really, really impressive stuff, right? Like, and I think you have to consider the way that Duke played and also, you know, him coming back from, you know, probably not being physically 100%, you know, had an early season injury. He didn't miss games, but like, you know, I think there's been some physical setbacks with his injuries in, you know, the last couple of years. You know, he was still kind of getting his legs under him in a lot of ways too, coming out of the pandemic. So like, again, AJ is not someone who I'm like as high on as other people. Like for me, he's outside the top 10. He's in that next group of prospects. But again, it kind of comes down to like, you don't want to like, you know, see the forest for the trees or whatever. I don't know if I've used that expression correctly, but like, you know, sort of the same point I'm making with Keegan. It's like, yeah, there's still some things this guy does really well that, you're going to, you know, willing to find out and kind of see what the other things are. Like for me, the biggest thing with AJ is just, you know, if his mobility does not improve that much, you know, defensively, what is he going to give you? Will he ever be more than like an average defender? Is he going to be somebody teams target defensively because of the way he sometimes struggles to move his hips? I think those to me are the more salient questions. Like, you know, whether or not he can shoot on the move is fair to ask, but also like not going to be why you don't take him, right?
Mm-hmm. I think there are quite a few players in this draft. Do you really like the, or at least most, a lot of people really like the rough outline of them. And then there's a question about shooting. And I truly mean question, not necessarily that their shooting is going to be bad forever, where it truly is a question. And I think that's the case with plenty of prospects over the years. And it's such an important skill. We were just talking about how important shooting is. And you just sometimes don't know. I'm curious if at any of these guys you feel like you have a read on, and I have a hunch given where you have some of them ranked, but if you have a read on more likely or less likely developing into good shooters, Dyson Daniels from the G League, Jeremy Sohan from Baylor, Usman Jang from playing in Australia, and there was one other guy I had on my list, from Notre Dame, Blake Wesley. Those guys, I really like lots of parts of their games. Confidence level in those in that group, who's going to develop as a shooter, as an outside shooter?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, some of that kind of depends on where you land. Like, you know, there are certain teams like, I guess, you know, New Orleans and San Antonio, to name two of them, who are better at, you know, just have a better track record of helping to develop shooting. Right. It's something you can get better at. And so, yeah, I mean, Dyson's someone I really, really like. I think he's a fine shooter in rhythm. I think it's just a matter of, you know, becoming a little bit better and comfortable in other ways, but I don't see him as like a non-shooter, right? And you can put Sohan, you know, make a similar argument where these are guys who just do so many things well, you know, in the flow of the game that you can live with them being average shooters. Like what you don't want is your non-shooter to be someone who like supplies a very, very narrow range of other skills, right? And that's why, you know, non-shooting centers can sometimes be such a detriment because if you have a 7-footer who doesn't shoot threes and there's only so many spaces they can occupy on the floor, right? But like Daniels and Sohan are both like good ball handlers for their size and great passers and have great feel and know how to play with teammates. So it's like when you can do that, it matters a little bit less. Like, you know, guys are going to find you and you're going to have to hit open shots and it'll, you know, ultimately matter. But it doesn't really impact like when we're talking about teenagers who I think have some, again, ball skills and like some, you know, comfort level, you know, at least shooting that I think it's something you can clean up. Right. And so like Usman is harder for me to comment on just because I've never seen him play live. Mm-hmm. You know, I've only watched the tape and, you know, the shooting is something that will have to come along more, but, you know, I don't have as good of a bead on whether, you know, he'll be a great shooter or just a competent one. And who was the last guy you said?
Blake Wesley.
Oh yeah. Blake. Okay. So I saw Blake play in person a handful, you know, I guess 3 or 4 times because Notre Dame is right up the road. And, I don't think he's like a non-shooter, but I think the bigger issue is just that he, you know, coming into the year at Notre Dame, where he was not someone who had played a ton of high-level basketball, you know, they weren't preparing for him to be that good. And they've kind of quickly realized that he would have to be the guy to kind of like shoulder their offense because their guard play wasn't great. So it didn't always go well for him, but he's going to have to develop. I don't think he's a true point guard. Like, I think he's going to have to be more of a slashing two. And so, mm-hmm. you know, he kind of needs to develop just sort of the catch and shoot skill set and just being able to kind of play off the catch and spot up. And it's not only just shooting, but it's like all that comes with it, right? So he kind of has to flesh out a lot in that respect. But, you know, I've seen him warm up and shoot, and I don't think it's like his shot's broken or anything. But it is a little bit harder to project with him just because he is a little bit, I think, more raw as a player than those other guys. And there's just like more that's going to have to kind of play out with his development. So that's going to kind of be a situation that his situation and the staff working with him is going to matter a lot, I think, in his case.
You mentioned him before, but one player I want to get a little deeper on is Johnny Davis from Wisconsin. I know you're definitely more of a fan than I am. I love his competitiveness. I love the mindset, and that's where he came up. But I see his game. I'm not sure he has the athleticism. He took a lot of bad shots. Maybe he can cut some of those out, but sometimes it looked like, well, he took a lot of those contested mid-rangers because he couldn't get anything better. He doesn't have the burst and the athleticism. I don't know. Talk me into him.
Yeah, Johnny's just like, he's another player who I profiled this season. And I also went to like 11 or 12 Wisconsin games, which is pretty stupid now that I'm thinking about it. But you know,
Madison's a fun city.
Well, you know, and sometimes you're going to see the other team. But it became pretty clear early in the year that Johnny was someone I needed to watch a lot of. And awesome guy. Like, you know, I had a good conversation with him. I think we, you know, had a Yeah, good rapport. And I think Johnny, like, he gets it. Like, he's someone who is very, very, like, obsessively competitive, is going to put the work in, I think is going to be fine with being a second or third option. And I think, I guess part of the benefit of going to all those Wisconsin games is I think I have a pretty good feel for, like, for the context. So, look, he was playing injured for a lot of the year. Teams are really keying on him. The way Wisconsin plays is very structured, and it kind of limits, like, what shots are available to you. And, like, you know, early in the year, if you watch the film, you know, from when they played, like, Houston and in December, and, you know, the stuff he was doing earlier in the year before he was getting double and triple teamed was really, really impressive. He's a great mid-range shooter. He gets really good elevation on that shot when he's healthy. So, you know, he doesn't quite need as much separation as some other guys to get it off. You know, he's going to have to become a better shooter just in all facets. But I don't worry about the athleticism. I don't worry about him getting into the paint. Like, he plays low to the ground. And again, at Wisconsin, the way that they play, there's just not a lot. It's not, like, very akin to how the NBA plays, right? And so I think his skill set will probably I think there's a pretty good chance that it scales just fine when you play, give him more space to operate. And again, he's going to have to become a better ball handler and expand those things. But he's just not the type of guy who I would want to, like, bet against continuing to improve. So I think however good we think he's going to be, he's probably going to be a little bit better than that in the end.
Okay. Right? Yeah. Another player I hope you can help me fill in the gaps a little bit is Ty Washington, point guard from Kentucky. I guess some people might think he's more of a shooting guard. I think he's going to be a point guard in the NBA. A lot of context around him. He was old for a freshman. He had an ankle injury during the year. He played with another point guard. Kentucky guards tend to play better in the NBA. It's a lot to sort through. And then you get to his actual game. What do you think about his prospects on the next level?
Yeah, I mean, I guess Ty is somebody who I've just been consistently lower on throughout the year. I mean, I'm just looking back at my spreadsheet, and I've had him in the 20s all season. Like, I've never had him higher than, 22, I think, is the highest I've had him, right? So, like, I think there's a pretty decent chance he's, like, a role player. I don't really ascribe the upside that came with his ranking in high school, and the fact that he's really old, I think matters. Like, you know, he's 2 months younger than Wendell Moore, who's a junior at Duke and played 3 years in college. So, like, you know, when you put it like that, now again, Ty was hurt for the second half of their season, didn't play great in conference, partially because he had a really bad ankle injury. And I think that's real. Like, there's some truth to that. But, you know, even when he was playing well at the start of the year, I didn't feel like the tape necessarily backed up, like, the numbers. Like, he had that one 17 assist game, but he's one of those guys who isn't going to do anything super spectacular. You know, he's just going to kind of get things done and, you know, connect other players. But there's nothing with him that super pops to me. I'm like, this is a guy I really, like, need on my team. But again, I think there's a chance that, you know, with the feel that he has, and he can play both guard spots, and, you know, he kind of fits in. And the Kentucky thing is why everybody's kind of going back to the well on him. It's like, what are we missing? So he is someone who I think could slide into the 20s on draft night. So it'll be interesting to see what happens in his case.
What do you think of that thought process? Because I go, well, Devin Booker, I didn't think he was going to be as good as he is. Emmanuel Quickly, I didn't think he's going to be as good as he is. Maybe I should just, you know, put Ty Washington a couple notches up on my draft board from wherever I think he should be.
Yeah, well, you know, it's just, I think in the cases of those two guys, at least they had, like, elite skills. Mm-hmm. Right, like, I think it was clear they're both going to be really good shooters, whereas Ty, maybe one of the knocks at him a bit, he doesn't have one. And again, like, it was a tricky context because Xavier Wheeler was playing point guard a lot of the time, and he's very ball dominant. So, like, I don't know if we really saw everything. And I did not see Ty in high school, so he was someone I didn't have as good of a handle on coming into the year. But he's just never been someone who blows me away.
Of everybody you have, that's generally considered a first-round pick. Who do you feel like you have the least grasp on, where there are potential outcomes, the floor, the ceiling, not like the extreme floor, the extreme ceiling, but, you know, the 75th and 25th percentile, based on what you can tell right now, like, it's the most extreme range?
That's a tough question. I mean, like, so you're just asking about guys who I think have really wide outcomes?
Right, where everything you've seen from them so far, where you just feel like, you know, it's hard to peg what they're going to be.
I think it would have to be Usman Jang, but again, that's kind of because I didn't see him play live, and I've never seen him live. So I don't have as much, you know, I've watched, you know, a handful of his games on film. At some point, there's like nothing left to see. Like, you know, you watch that and it's just like, until you kind of see how his body works in person, it's a little bit more difficult. So I think that's what I'd say. Like, and I think, you know, he is definitely one with sort of a wide range. But I guess that'd be my answer in that case.
Yeah. What about the guys you have seen?
Guys who have wide outcomes. I mean, like Patrick Baldwin is one where I really, really buy his talent. Like he's super, super talented.
So why wasn't he better last year?
Well, he had the worst year of his life. And so it's on and off the court. There were things he was dealing with. He was playing injured a lot of the time. So like, and again, Milwaukee, that team was not really structured to like help him. And he's never been played in a situation where he's played with great guards. So like, again, he's probably a role player, but he's 6'10 and shoots the shit out of the ball. So like, that's somebody I'm okay seeing how good he is. There are different, you know, varying opinions on him. And some people are frustrated because he was hard to go see, but I think it'd just be foolish to hold a grudge against him for that. Like, the numbers are not going to be predictive of him being good, but I don't necessarily think they mean he's going to be bad. It's such an outlier year. So, you know, he's someone who I'd still be interested in taking in the second half of the first round.
You've kind of alluded to this maybe, I think, a couple times. This seems like a relatively weak draft.
I don't know, man. Like, I always just think it's a bad idea to label it.
I agree with that. Like, but let's do it anyway.
Well, look, like,
Nobody ever knows that. They're wrong all the time.
Look, I think Jabari Smith is a legit number one pick contender in any draft he's in. Like,
wow.
The way that he's been categorized is not how I feel. So that's just my opinion. Like, I think in any draft, that's somebody who I would think about taking a number one. The other guys are good prospects, and I think, you know, I can get to about 10 to 12 guys who I think are pretty good prospects and would be like in lottery contention in various ways, you know, maybe top 20 in different drafts, right? Like there are good prospects in this draft, guys who are solid, reliable players. And I think in any draft, it's kind of folly because once you get to a certain point, like, you know, usually between 15 and 20 guys you feel good about. And after that, and maybe this year there's less of those guys to your point. But it becomes so much about fit and situation. And it's like kind of hard to know who's going to pan out, right? So like, again, there's a lot of guesswork. And I think I will say that it's very, very hard to rank like everything from like 16 to 45 because those guys are not that different in terms of talent level and ability. And there's, you know, various things you can put into it, but there's not necessarily a lot of separation. And it becomes very situational in terms of which team you are and what do you value. But I think the question then is that a weakness or does that signal that there might be strength, right? Where there might be value in the 30s where some of those guys pan out. Like, and we don't know the answer to that. So that's why I don't, you know, want to like slap a label on the draft. But it is one of those years where we'll see guys who go, you know, in the top 25 who don't really do a lot. And then there will be guys who go, you know, early to mid second round where a few of them will probably pan out. Because it is like the delineation between, you know, 16 and 45, even 50 is not as much as maybe in some other years.
Okay. So that bodes well for the top of the second round. I am a believer that, you know, it's not as simple as is this draft good or bad? There are ranges that are stronger or weaker than usual. That's interesting. The last thing I want to ask you about, like I said, I am not studying this year round like you are. And so I know the answer to this question is not going to be somebody you rate as a first rounder because my specific question is, the way I do this is, you know, I will dig deeper into basically anybody I can find reliable who's covering the draft. If they have them as a first rounder, I'll take a look at them. And those are the prospects I look a little deeper into. So I'm asking, is there somebody who nobody really has as a first rounder, but you could see when this is all said and done years later how this turned out where you say, you know what? I see how their career panned out and they had a really good career. So it's somebody you didn't have as a first rounder. It's somebody nobody really has a first rounder, but you just feel like he's maybe being rated as a second rounder, maybe even being rated as undrafted. Somebody I should take a deeper look at where you could say, you know what? Maybe there's something there.
Yeah. I mean, I would say like one of the really interesting kind of upside guys who will be, you know, in all likelihood a second rounder is John Butler from Florida State. who, again, it's weird because he's 7 foot and weighs 175 pounds, right? So, like, then you go back to the Chet argument. Like, well, what is that? Like, he's even skinnier than Chet. But, you know, Butler's actually a really good shooter for that size. He's a pretty good mover. He's got some skill. And he was, like, actually kind of impactful in the combine scrimmage. So, like, I don't have a ton of necessarily confidence that he's going to be really good. But I do think he's a pretty interesting player where there are outcomes where it's just like, yeah, you know, we're going to park that guy and have him shoot threes and protect the rim a little bit, you know. So, you know, he's one. And then I like Tyrese Martin from UConn as like a, you know, he's 23. He's a senior. He's going to be 24 next year. But like just a gritty player who kind of plays a lot of different positions and I think is kind of like has good role player traits and I could see him, you know, outperforming guys who get picked in front of him. So those are two second rounders I think to look at.
Awesome. I'm going to take a deeper look into those guys now. And I appreciate you you adding them to my list and clarifying so much about these highly ranked prospects. I know you're busy this time of year. Thanks a ton for coming on.
Yeah, no problem, man. I appreciate it.
Bring on spring projects with Spring Black Friday Savings from The Home Depot. With free delivery on over 2 million items, you can bring on the spring cleaning, the patio decorating, and the front yard gardening. And if you need it fast, get same-day delivery on thousands of products like fertilizer and seeds to keep your yard looking beautiful. Bring on the spring doing and spring your way only at The Home Depot. How doers get more done. Order select in-stock items by 4 p.m. subject to availability.
It's one thing falling in love with a house, picturing yourself moving in and calling it home, and quite another navigating the world of price negotiating, mortgage lenders, and finding the budget that works best for you. An agent who's a Realtor can make understanding that world easier. Realtors have the expertise, access to proprietary data, and tools to help you get from imagining living somewhere to actually doing it. That's the kind of help we can provide. Because that's who we are. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors.